Beyond the Beauty is a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Bobby Brown.
Throughout my career, I have worked with so many models before there was a term supermodels, and the models of my early days taught me a lot. I used to watch them fix the makeup I did, and I learned a lot about what to do and what not to do. And modeling is such an interesting career. I'm not going to say it's a career choice because you can't just decide to become a model. You are a model or you're not a model. But what I think is really interesting about talking to Rosie Huntington is that she had the utmost of success being a model, from her days on the catwalk to Victoria's Secret to so many beauty and fashion campaigns. And now she's a beauty entrepreneur, aligning with many different brands. And not only that, this sweet, smart, beautiful girl is also married to the handsome actor Jason Statham, and they have a 3-year-old son. Honestly, could it get any better? I'm so excited to talk to Rosie Huntington to hear her story.
Good morning, Rosie. Bobby here.
Hi, Bobby. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you.
So, Rosie, it's so nice to meet you.
Bobby, it's an honor to meet you. An honor. You know, having worked for so many years now, 17 years I've been in this industry and been aware of Bobby Brown, the makeup brand, and you as an artist and everything that you've accomplished through your career.
Well, it's kind of a bummer that I never got to work with you, because I guess 17 years ago I was, you know, in business meeting after business meeting when you started modeling.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been aware of you. I've been aware of, you know, you as a model, and now you as this like emerging businesswoman, media, you know, empire. But you're the first model that I've talked to on this podcast. So, you know, just tell me what it must be like being a model and walking into a room and every single person every day of your life turns around to look at you.
Think anyone's ever really asked me that question. I mean, there are days when it feels incredibly powerful, of course, when you walk into a room and eyes are on you. And then there are days when you feel an immense amount of pressure when you have that as well. And I think that I wouldn't describe myself as being an extrovert, and I wouldn't describe myself as being an introvert, but I definitely love my job. I love people and I love being out and about, but I also really value the time in my personal life and the time at home. And I really get I rejuvenate in that way by spending time alone and being behind closed doors. It's really important to me to have that balance. And I also have always felt like I leave my work at work. I'm not somebody that really takes it home with me. I see my life as two very different, many different ways. We're all multifaceted, aren't we? Especially women, but particularly when it comes to my personal life and my work life, I feel that, you know, there is a divide. I leave my work at studio or in the office and I come home and I'm Rosie in a different way. And I think that's important to me, and that's just how it's always been. It's not something I try to do. It's just something I suppose I've really realized and come to terms with over the years.
How did you get started in modeling and then the beauty industry?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll take you way back to the very, very beginning. Ever since I can really remember, always loved fashion and beauty and women's magazines and clothes and makeup. That was the teenage girl that I was. And my mother and I would, you know, bond over reading magazines. Every birthday I would ask for a subscription to Vogue magazine or Elle magazine. That was, you know, what I would ask for. And I just always was intrigued by what went into creating these images that we saw in the magazine. And if I went to the theater or I went to see the ballet, I was fascinated, of course, by this production, but I wanted to sort of scratch the surface and know what was going on behind the scenes. So I was always sort of fascinated by what the creative process was, from making clothing to making these images to theater. And back then, I mean, I was, you know, in my teens. I started modeling in 2003. So we're going back a little bit before that. You know, there was no internet. There was no, you know, the fashion industry was shrouded. It was very mysterious. It was, you know, what you saw were these polished images, and there wasn't really any more information on it. So I'd sort of hoped that I was going to be able to get a place at the London College of Fashion. And again, I had no contact, no idea what I really wanted to do within the fashion industry or even what jobs were available. I grew up on a farm, very, very rural England. Nobody I knew was going into anything this kind of, or was interested in anything creative in this way. And so when we were 16 at school, everybody had to go and do a week of work experience, get an internship essentially. So most kids went off and worked at the doctor's offices or within the local hospital or at the local mechanics and things like that. And I wanted to go to London. I just knew that I wanted to go to London and I wanted to work in fashion. So I picked up the Yellow Pages, the big book that we used to get by our phone.
That's how I got my started in beauty also, okay. Which is very funny.
Okay, good.
And we're not the same age. So
so I picked up the Yellow Pages and I looked up all of the information of the brands where I would buy my clothes from. So Topshop, Marks and Spencer, Miss Selfridge, and I wrote to their headquarters and anything I could find. You know, in the back of magazines, they have the sort of directory in the back of the magazines with sort of addresses for local companies mm-hmm. or agencies and things like that. And I just wrote probably 30, 40 letters and sent them in the post. And a few days later, I came back from school and my mother said, oh, we got a phone call today from one of the places that you'd written off to. And it was this little modeling agency in the West End of London. And they said they'd love to have you up for a week of work experience. So I was elated. I was just so excited and thrilled. I was going to London. This was a huge deal. That was the most exciting opportunity to travel out of the countryside, to go up to London and be working in this world. And so I got to London a few weeks later, turned up in this tiny weeny room of an agency. What I think I was hoping was, again, I had no idea really what a modeling agency was. I knew it was an agency that looked after models, but what do they do? And of course, it's a bunch of bookers. It was five bookers sat around a round table, smoking cigarettes, picking up the phone, screaming down the phone, copious amounts of glasses of wine and cups of coffee and tea throughout the day, faxes and you name it. And so I spent the week making, you know, photocopies, running errands, refilling coffee cups, emptying ashtrays.
And you were 16, correct? You were 16 at the time?
Yeah. And I remember being a bit frustrated because I thought I was going to get to go on, you know, on a shoot or go into a, just, you know, see something more creative than this. Anyway, so that was it. I wrapped a really exciting week. It was exciting nonetheless. And then I went back to school, finished my exams for that year, and then decided to go back up to London that summer with a friend. And my mum had said, you know, listen, if you want to, you know, finish school and you want to go into the fashion industry, it's not what you know, it's who you know in the fashion industry. And you've got to contacts. You don't have any. So you better keep your contacts at this agency. So I went in and there was a new booker and she said, listen, I think we're going to need a little bit of a rehaul. You know, your skin's really bad. You're going to have to grow back your eyebrows. We'll have to fix your hair. But would you be open to going out on a, you know, would you be open if I took some Polaroids and, you know, maybe sent you out on a couple of go-sees and castings and we'll take it from there. But don't get excited. We don't know where this could go. And that was it. So I leapt at the chance because I thought, here's my opportunity to see the creative side of the industry. And within a few days, I was on my first test shoot. And then within a few months, I was on my first shoot. And a few months after that, I was traveling to the States. And, you know, I'd been on one plane before that. Wow. And I started working pretty rapidly. And I had no ego, no career sort of strategy. It was just say yes to the job, do the work. And that's really how it was for many years. I just was very excited to be in that sort of world and to be traveling, you know, super young. And my parents had no kind of insight or advice to really give except go for it. You know, this is opportunity of a lifetime.
Wait, I have one question though, because I know your first catwalk was you were 17 years old and you walked along Naomi Campbell, which must have been terrifying. I mean, tell me what it was like arriving and realizing, oh my God.
Well, this is a funny story because actually, I think when I did my first fashion show, I didn't even know that she was in the show until after the show, or until I read, then consequently read it sometime later. And I have no idea why I didn't know that she was in the show, because it's Naomi Campbell, but I assume she sort of came in last minute, Naomi style, and walked the runway and then left. So that was unbeknownst to me. But I mean, I definitely remember being young, just being in awe of these glamazons and just feeling like a bit of a fish out of water for, and in many ways I still do. But yeah, I think it was very exciting and I loved it.
But for those of you guys that don't know this, and many people do know you from the Victoria's Secret world, where you literally, you know, were there when it became like this big, like bigger than anything that ever happened in the fashion industry. So how many years did you do Victoria's Secret and what was that like?
So it wasn't long after I'd started working. I think it was 2005, 2006. So when I was about 19, and I worked with them for 5 years until I decided to step away from working with them. And again, that was just the most truly exciting experience. I mean, I think for me, I had heard of Victoria's Secret, but I hadn't really thought much of it. And it wasn't until I had a boyfriend that was American and he said, the true iconic supermodels all do Victoria's Secret. And that's sort of my first introduction. And then I think at the time when I was starting out, the look that was in fashion at the time was, I don't think my look sort of fitted in with it. It was sort of the early 2000s. So a lot of the models were coming out of Eastern Europe and it was very, very slender figures. And I just didn't really fit into that. I was always a bit shorter and considered to be curvaceous. And I had
Wait. A bit shorter? How tall are you?
I'm actually 5'9". So you'll know that that's not on the tall side for a model. It's, you know, you're just skimming you're basically like at the bottom end of the height requirement, really.
And whoever called you curvaceous?
Yeah. I don't remember who individually called me curvaceous, but it was the resounding feedback that I would get when I didn't book a job was, Rosie's great. She's just very wholesome looking and her personality is too standout. So it was a case of, I suppose I had a bright personality. And so for me, actually finding my home then within Victoria's Secret, where they celebrated, you know, women with personalities and vivaciousness with women and a wholesomeness, mm-hmm. I think at the time, I felt that I really found my home and it was a great experience. I traveled the world with them, some amazing trips. It was, that period of time was really when VS was in its heyday and, you know, all the supermodels were there and there was just so much potential and opportunity to build off working with them. That's how I always saw it, was the stepping stone to many opportunities beyond them.
I think you're one of the first models, certainly the first supermodels, that said, you know what, I love this modeling thing, but I want to do some other things. You know, so what was the first thought in your head and how did you transition to being an entrepreneur?
I was always very aware of the shelf life that modeling could potentially have. And I think for me, I've always felt that, and I still do, that it can all go away tomorrow. And I had a modeling agent at the time who said to me, you know, you've got to save your money, Rosie, because most girls' career, they're done by the time they're 25, 26. So save your money and be smart. And I just remember thinking, well, that totally makes sense. And so I saved my money and I was sensible in that way. But I just also remember being slightly panicked because I'd left school so young. I'd left full-time education at 17. And I remember thinking, well, if it finishes for me in another, you know, few years, what am I going to do? And I really need to pivot this into something else. And I'm actually doing what I really love. I'm in the industry I always dreamt of. So I've got to be smart about this. There was one model to me who always really stood out. And she's, you know, a little bit older than I am, but she always stood out to me as a businesswoman with integrity, and she'd really pivoted her modeling career and her, I think, her general sort of aesthetic and her personality into business in a way that I just it really related with me. And that was Elle Macpherson. Elle's in her 50s, but I just always looked up to her and saw what she did with her career and took a lot of inspiration from that. In general, other than Victoria's Secret, I had done a lot of lingerie modeling. And so I knew that there was this perception of me or this idea that I was this lingerie girl. And so I felt that it would make sense for me to sort of go into looking at what having a lingerie line was like. And so I launched a lingerie line with a retailer in the UK called Marks and Spencer about 9 years ago. I think really one of the things that I have always felt really uncomfortable with, particularly in the early days of my career, was this idea of, and I don't know whether you experience this as an artist, but you're so often waiting for the phone to ring. You're waiting for your agent to tell you that somebody else wants you to work with them. And having had many years and many periods where the phone didn't ring, and I felt the stress of, is this over, or what's going to happen? When am I, you know, also just the stress of being bored. I love to work. I never felt comfortable with that idea of waiting for somebody else to decide whether I work or not. And so alongside that part of my career, I've always wanted to be quite proactive in other areas because I like to work and I'm fulfilled by what I do.
It's amazing. When I read your bio and how many projects and how many things you've done, it's quite impressive, you know, and you are just the beginning of this journey, which you don't even realize. But your editorial site, Rose Inc. First of all, why is it not Rosy Inc.?
I'd love to get your perspective on this as well, but I just never really wanted to call it after my name. I felt that for me, it was about building a community and it was about highlighting other individuals in the industry. And I felt that if I called it after my own name, it became about me. And I think that it was, for me, it was an important decision to say, hey, I this is my business and I want to do this. And I can't wait to share more with you, but this isn't just about me. And so I wanted the name to have a nod to me and a nod to who I am. Everybody calls me Rose. And then I liked the idea of the ink. I thought it brought the sort of incorporated nature of business into something that was inherently feminine. And I think that that's, you know, partly who I am in many ways is, you know, on one hand, I'm deeply feminine and a true sort of girl's girl and a woman's woman. But there is this sort of side of me that's, you know, no nonsense and loves to get shit done.
Oh, well, I think it's amazing. And I love all of your interviews. So, Rosie, what other things have you been involved with?
Yeah. So I talked to you a little bit about launching a lingerie line here within the UK with Marks and Spencer. And then I think it was 2016, we launched Fragrance and Beauty, which I developed with them and their product developers in-house at M&S. And that was an amazing opportunity. Absolutely loved it. I feel like I really cut my teeth on that experience. It was a wonderful, very exciting time in my life to launch these products and have them sold at a national retailer within the UK and for them to touch so many women's lives. And then I signed with Hourglass last year. Hourglass having been one of my favorite makeup brands for, you know, 7 or 8 years, just always loved the brand as a consumer first, really, and had bought the products myself, had been introduced to them like most of the products I get introduced to via a makeup artist. Literally went out the next day and bought myself some products. And then, as you know, over the years, I just naturally talk about them. And I launched Rose Inc. I talk about the products I was using in my tutorials. So I got connected with the brand and it just was a very natural thing. We did a few projects together on Rose Inc. And then it evolved into them asking me to become their first face of the brand. So that was very exciting. And I've been very, very lucky to have so many partnerships over the years. And I think since becoming a mother, I will say now when I look to partner with a brand or align with a brand, that authenticity needs to be there for me. I think before, you know, it was a different time. You could get away with things more. And I think it was different being in your 20s. But, you know, as you sort of get older and you become more discerning in your choices. And then, of course, my partnership with Pipette.
I'd love to hear about that, especially being a working mother. Your baby is three, correct?
Yeah, my son is three, Jack. Yeah. He's good fun right now. Okay, so this is, you know, this is a really interesting story because, you know, I'm a new mom. And I think like most new parents, when, you know, particularly mothers, when they're pregnant, they start to do all the research and looking at products and what they should buy. And it's so overwhelming. At least it was for me. I didn't know. I've never been around a baby before. So it was just a really overwhelming, nerve-wracking time. And I gave birth to Jack and, you know, you find your way. And it was about, once Jack was about 18 months old, Pipette, or the team at Amaris, which is the team behind Pipette, got in touch with me and they sent me through this deck called The Longest Shortest, which was essentially all of their research, market research, and information on this product line, which had not hit the market yet. And I was just really blown away by the level of integrity that had gone into creating this brand. You know, they wanted to open up conversation about bringing me on board as a spokeswoman as a partner. And I felt, you know, pretty sure that this was going to be something special, but I also felt that this was one that I really needed to make sure I felt very comfortable in promoting or talking about, because this now is not just a beauty product or a shirt or a pair of jeans. This is about a product that you're recommending to a mother to use on her baby. So I decided that, you know, I wanted to go up to their headquarters in San Francisco and learn more. And they walked me through the laboratory and they shared more information with me about how they create these products and their clean mission that, you know, I hopefully were going to really disrupt the market for new parents, particularly millennial parents, who I think have just become so much more conscious in their purchasing. I was just really, really impressed by the products. And so that's really how it all started. And the brand's just over a year old now, and it's gone from strength to strength. And I know it's touching a lot of people's lives and really making a difference. And I think for me, as a mum and as a consumer first, I finally felt like I'd found a brand that I really felt comfortable using on my son, felt really comfortable using on myself. They're non-toxic, they're clean, they're going to make a difference in our lives without really having to think about it too much.
Oh, well, I can't wait to check it out. But I also have to ask you, talk to me a little bit about your husband. Like, what a couple, what a family, what a team. Tell me about meeting him.
Jason and I have been together now for, we've known each other for about 11 years. It's a team. It's a real team. And you become a real family unit when you have a kid. So we obviously spent many years together, just the two of us. And I feel just really lucky to be able to experience this journey with him. And he's such a strong, stoic character in my life, who's just always got my back and is, you know, even on those days where you want to wring each other's necks, he really is my, you know, my number one fan and my number one champion. And it goes both ways. And, you know, he's a fantastic dad. And we just both absolutely adore being Jack's parents and very, very invested in that. And so it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I joke all the time because, you know, Jack's a 3-year-old and Jason's this like energizer bunny who from the moment he wakes up is go, go, go. They both exhaust me. I'm just exhausted all the time by the pair of them, but they just wear each other out now. So I'm like, you two, you guys just wear each other out. But it's fantastic to watch them both together.
It's so interesting and funny because I would never in a million years think that we would have any similarities, any comparisons. And listening to your story is so parallel, besides I'm 5 foot tall and not a supermodel, but the mother of three boys and being an entrepreneur and just learning from other people that I've worked with and then bringing it in and doing it myself. And yeah. I you know, my last question is, what do you think you've learned from all the different things that you've been involved with that, you know, people that are listening could take in what they're doing?
There's so many things I think I've learned. I would have a hard time to sort of define one specific thing, but I think the thing I've learned the most over my career is you've got to be prepared to work from the bottom to the top before you get there. And you've got to work hard. And I've always had a hard time saying as a model that I've worked hard because of the, I guess, the pluses and the pros that come along with being a model. and the paychecks and the travel, and it's so glamorous. So I have a hard time saying that I work hard, because I look at somebody like a nurse who is really, really working hard, in my opinion. But I've always been focused, and I've always been strategic and realistic about my capabilities. And I think that that's really important to an entrepreneur or for somebody who wants a career. I think you have to throw entitlement out the window. And I feel that that's something I see more and more of now, as there's a lot of entitlement with people when they come into the step into the workforce. So you have those moments where, you know, I was sent home from jobs. I was, you know, cancelled from shows in the middle of lineup. I was told I was this, I was told I was that. You know, I've had projects pulled from me last minute, but I've never sort of allowed those things to define me, but I've allowed them to shape me and learn from them and move forward, I think. And I think the other thing I've learned is that your reputation really serves you. And I think you takes really a lifetime to build a reputation. And I'm sure you would agree with that. Having a good work ethic, being somebody that people enjoy working with and being around. And that doesn't mean that you can't still be firm. And it doesn't mean you can't get your point across. And I think oftentimes it's really hard for women to be firm or to be assertive, because we're regarded in a way of then being flying off the handle, you know, just difficult. So I always try and really think about the way that I'm asserting my power with firmness, but with fairness.
Now, those are all very good, you know, takeaways that people, you know, don't realize how hard it is to be successful, how hard it is, how much you have to work, you know, overtime and hard, and, you know, and you learn each time. I mean, I am very much looking forward to seeing what your next steps are, because I think you've just scratched the surface. And honestly, Rosie, you are an even more beautiful person on the inside than outside, which is saying a lot, because you are quite beautiful.
Thank you, Bobby. That's really kind. Thank you.
So here is the speed round I ask everyone. And the first question is, what does beauty mean to you?
Beauty is a feeling. I believe it's a feeling that you have on the inside about yourself, and it is a feeling that you leave the people who you surround yourself with or the people that you interact with. And I think inherently it's a good feeling.
What is your daily makeup routine? Your quick makeup routine?
Quick makeup routine would be, you know, skincare routine, obviously, and then concealer, brow, bronze, blush, curl of eyelashes if it's really quick, and then I would say like a little bit of lip balm or lip liner and lip balm. That's like super, super quick day to day.
And how about your favorite cocktail?
Favorite cocktail? I love a Moscow Mule. I love a margarita. I love just a straight tequila on the rocks. I love all cocktails, basically. I've never met one I didn't like.
And are you a cupcake or a crisp lover?
Crisp. 100%.
Salt.
Savory all day long. Yeah.
All day long. All right. One last question. What is the craziest thing you've ever done just for fun? I danced on stage with Flo Rida.
I'm trying to think of something. I'm trying to think of things that I probably could repeat on this podcast, first of all, but I don't know.
Sounds like you need to have a little more fun, Rosie.
I 1,000% need to have more fun, Bob. I 1,000% need to have more fun. I'm like, this year, it's done. I'm done. I need to go out and have some fun.
Yeah, this gives you permission. So could you tell everyone where we could hear more and find you?
Well, anybody who wants to find me, here's my home address and my mobile number. No, I'm Rosie HW on Instagram. roseinc.com. If you'd like to find out more about Pipette, it's, you know, pipette.com. Definitely recommend any new mothers or parents to check out those products. And really, that's how you can find me, I think, other than probably bombarding my PR company.
It was such a joy talking to you. And I'm really grateful that you came on the podcast. And I look forward to meeting you in person one day.
Yeah, me too, Bobby. Thank you. You're such an icon to me.
Big kiss.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.